Stephen.
Hello, Stephen. Good to hear your voice.
Good to hear your voice, too. How are things going on your end?
You know, everything is...
If that's not a personal question.
Well, it's funny. I wasn't expecting you to go there. Everything on my end is fine. Thank you very much.
Good.
It literally and figuratively. Though things are... People are losing their shit over the Great Reset. And I have to admit, this is just one of those things that has me shaking my head. It's like people got bored with the New World Order being this shibboleth that they considered to be some kind of UN plan to take over the planet.
Oh, Agenda 21. Oh, my favorite.
And like, you know, New World Order was first uttered in 1991 by George H.W. Bush. And
yeah, I look it was a conservative idea.
I look around, though, and I like, what do we have from 1991 that we can still consider new? Nothing.
A-team? I don't know. I have no idea.
The New World Order isn't new. At this point in time, it's a very, very old world order. So going on and on about the New World Order, it just shows that that it was so long in the tooth, they were aching for something new to jump in, to fuel their UN paranoia. And it's the Great Reset.
Well, and the thing about the Great Reset, too, is it's this great basket of conspiracy ideas, because everyone, it's like this, like a three-year-old's Lego project, where they just keep bolting new stuff onto it, and it doesn't look like anything, but it's really colorful, and it just gets really big. You say, I'm going to put a window on here and a couple of wheels. The Great Reset has attracted all of these crazy ideas that have been around, like you say, for quite some time. I mean, some of them have been around for hundreds of years. I mean, I had someone the other day going on about the Freemasons.
And, that
conspiracy theory has been around for a couple hundred years, the Illuminati, which, has been around since the real Illuminati that was founded by someone by the name of Weishaupt. Adam Weishaupt in the late 1700s. It was the big spooky boogeyman of Europe at that time, which had absolutely no substance to it. It was a couple dozen people who said, hey, let's take over the world. And they were like, this is really difficult. I think, I'm going to do something else. So they didn't. But these conspiracy things have been bubbling along, and now we see them all being bolted onto this Great Reset idea, and the whole idea is being propagated in its mushy amorphous form by real politicians, in the sense that they are actually elected officials, not in the sense that they're good politicians, but they are actual politicians who are propagating this myth. I mean, one of them right now is Pierre Poilievre, who has a petition going on right now that is part, it's on his writing association website. It's a petition, stop the Great Reset. Whereas Justin Trudeau told a United Nations conference, this pandemic has provided an opportunity for a reset. This is our chance to accelerate our pre-pandemic efforts to reimagine economic systems. And whereas global financial elites have called for the same Great Reset, which would re-engineer economies and societies to empower the elites at the expense of the people, and whereas Canadians must fight back against global elites, preying on the fears and desperation of people to impose their power grab, the undersigned call on the government to end the Great Reset. Focus instead on protecting lives and livelihoods of hardworking people and protect our freedom. Sign here. Where do you start? I mean, Pierre Poilievre is, he's considered one of the bright lights of the Conservative Party.
Wow.
In Canada.
And he's a loud light. I don't know about a bright light.
Bright is a relative voice. Term.
Yeah.
Compared to the other lights, he's, he's a 12-watt bulb as opposed to like a 3-watt bulb. There it is, front and center. And, does he really believe it? Or is this just another stick to beat up the gullible and separate them from their campaign donations? I think mostly the second one, but it certainly fits into his persona that he has cultivated in politics for the last number of elections.
Well, he's the man is a nonstop obnoxious machine. He's like one of those speak and spells. You pull the lever And it just goes on and on and on. And, you know, his version just goes on and on and on with various conspiracy theories. He's the guy that keeps pushing the we dialogues. He's the guy that always keeps pushing that there's some kind of nefarious scheme going on. And that's a conservative ploy. I mean, it's right out of their playbook, which is tell people that they need to, that there's something they need to be protected from, and tell people that you'll protect them. And, you know, the discussion about a reset is not some reordering of our economy. It's not some takeover by the elites. I mean, you could argue that how much more is there for them to take over? There's already very, very powerful families that earn far more money than they could ever spend in 100 lifetimes. Meantime, there's a lot of people struggling. So I don't understand how we could engineer society any further for the elites, because the truth is, as we've seen throughout history, when you concentrate too much power and too much wealth at the top, eventually the people at the bottom, you know, the natives get restless and heads roll, literally. So yeah, the key to really controlling things is to control them quietly. You know, if a politician says something about a reset, then that's right out there in the public. They're not doing it to taunt us and say, aha, we're going to do this and you are weak and you cannot stop me. I am mighty. They're putting it out there because it's a relatively innocuous term and the goals are relatively innocuous. The, you know, they say that the most powerful people in the world are people whose names you'll never know, because you can't control things if people see you pulling the levers. The smartest thing to do is to do things quietly and subtly and slowly foment change in public attitudes and so on, to give support for the structures you're trying to implement. The idea that Trudeau would go out there and publicly say, we're going to change everything, it's absurd on its face.
Well, and they're kind of late to the party too, because the phrase the Great Reset was coined in late May, when Prince Charles and Klaus Schwab, who was the executive chairman of the World Economic Forum, announced plans to convene world leaders and discuss climate change and how to rebuild, you know, an economy damaged by the pandemic. It was basically a recovery program for you know, the damage the pandemic has done to world economies. And, you know, and the meeting was called the Great Reset. And all of a sudden, you know, things took off. But this was, you know, it was announced back in May. And yeah, and they're finally going like, no, this is now the game is afoot now. And Trudeau, spoke at a United Nations meeting in September, which, and that clip has been circulated among right-wing media all over the place, that, where he used the idea of, here's our opportunity for a great reset. And he was talking about addressing inequities. He was talking about, an opportunity to reimagine the economy in ways that is fairer, looks after the most vulnerable, doesn't leave people behind. It's not that radical an idea if you actually care about people. That is a pretty big caveat, because, a lot of people, apparently don't care that much about people. What Trudeau actually said, and Anthony Furry of the Sun, of the Toronto Sun, or the Sun Chain, tweeted out that Trudeau was excited at the opportunity for a reset given by the pandemic, and says it's reckless and troubling. And what Trudeau actually said, this is our chance to help your pre-pandemic efforts to reimagine economic systems that actually address global challenges like extreme poverty, inequality, and climate change. It's like, oh, those are terrible things. I mean, yeah, why would we want to address extreme poverty, inequality, and climate change? I mean, boy, that's commie talk.
Well, the weird thing is that is actually opposite of the notion of letting the elites get greater control of society. It's the flip side, because if we're talking about treating poverty as a serious issue, if we're talking about trying to create a greater balance in our economy, that is not something that the elites want. So this notion that the Great Reset is something that the rich, powerful elites are trying to do to cement their hold, this is the opposite of that. The rich elites, they don't give a damn about the people who are starving. As far as they're concerned, in order for them to be rich, people need to be poor. And there's a lack of logic here in claiming that this is a plot by global elites. It doesn't make any sense. A plot by global elites would be an attempt to give greater enrichment to them, not to people who are suffering poverty.
Yeah, and you know, just to give an idea of just how muddled the thinking is on this thing, there's a tweet that I retweeted from a Australian senator, the senator from Queensland named Malcolm Roberts, and I don't know much about him, but a quick breeze through his Twitter profile shows me that he's more of a Trumpist than anything else, and he said in his tweet, I think it was November 17th, said the great bracket communist reset is about the world's billionaires, celebrities, and elites changing the economic systems to advantage them. They will take your wealth, freedoms, and our sovereignty so they can profit from our blood, sweat, and tears. Say, okay, I don't know a lot of communist billionaires to begin with. It's just, those things don't really generate. I know a lot of poor communists. I don't know an awful lot of rich ones. And, the whole idea, for them to, like you said, to change the economic systems to advantage them. Well, when you got people like Gates and Elon Musk and, all of these, Bezos, people who are billionaires so many times over that it doesn't really make any difference. I'm not sure how much more the system can advantage them. And, in fact, it's like you said, it's the other way around. It gives them advantages to the disadvantages because, ever since Reagan and the tax cuts and, combination of globalization and trickle-down economics and all of that stuff, the poor have become poorer, the rich became richer, the middle class has been just almost squeezed out of existence. And since Reaganomics and Thatcher in the UK, economies haven't worked for most people. I mean, the quality of life, their buying power, all the rest is steadily diminished. Wages haven't kept up with inflation. And, it's harder and harder to get ahead. And, the idea that a reset says, maybe we should reverse this trend so people have more money. I mean, this isn't about storming the barricades of the Bastille and, finding the seven people that are actually inside it and saying, the rich must pay. The NDP is going on about their 1% wealth tax thing. That's really not the answer to these things. No one's suggesting that, running around with Elon Musk's head on a pike. It's about finding a way to even out the bumps in the system so that more people aren't left behind and that the wealth is shared fairly and corporations aren't able to get away with what they've been able to get away with the last little while, which is firing people, suppressing wages, and, pocketing the profits.
Well, capitalism itself is ailing because capitalism requires to exist in its purest form and its proper form, it requires competition. And our system has been built more and more towards monopolies almost. I mean, you've got Tesla, you've got Amazon, Tesla's not a monopoly in the car business, but in the electric car business, it stands head and shoulders. Microsoft isn't a monopoly, but it's so huge, it's anti-competitive. Walmart is so huge, it's anti-competitive. Amazon is so huge, it's anti-competitive, and it kills the local competition, it kills local businesses wherever they go in. And so in order to really rescue capitalism from the creeping corporatism that it's been succumbing to, we do need a reset. And this isn't a communist thing. This is, we need to make capitalism work again. And what we've been seeing is people using capitalism to enrich themselves and to change the system from capitalism to corporatism, to a system that favors corporations rather than competition. And I'm a capitalist. I'm a capitalist who believes in, my wife calls social programs supportive capitalism, because they really exist in order to keep things flowing and keep capitalism healthy. And it's not just that people are having trouble getting ahead. People are having trouble staying in place. People are falling further and further behind. And people with less and less disposable income are people who aren't buying things. And when things aren't being purchased, the economy doesn't do well, businesses don't do well, and there needs to be a reset of how we look at the way our society is going, the direction that it's going, because the direction we're going to increase corporatism benefits nobody. It benefits a small number of people, and it hurts a great, large, huge swath of people. Because let's face it, businesses aren't owned only by Jeff Bezos. Businesses are owned mom and pop businesses, small businesses. They need to survive. They're the backbone, or have been traditionally the backbone of our economy. They need to survive. They need to be strengthened. They need their position to be more stable. And the way to do that is to make sure that people have some sense of stability in their income, some sense of stability in their lives, some ability to make up lost ground, some ability to perhaps get ahead, or at least stay in place with less of a struggle. We need people to feel less desperate and less willing to hold on to what little money they've got if we want to see capitalism reform itself and revive itself.
Yeah, and I think the people behind, you know, the concept of the Great Reset is that the system just isn't sustainable the way it is. It's going the wrong way. And you have all these conservative governments that just keep pouring fuel on the fire. I mean, they say, well, you know, this, the answer to this is lower taxes. So, you know, we now have, you know, corporate taxes are down around 10%. You know, the lowest they've been in ages. In Canada, you know, in Ontario, they're particularly low, even compared to some American jurisdictions. The Americans complain that, you know, Ontario's corporate tax rate is unfair because it's so competitive that you know, they can't compete against such low tax rates, even though we have this big social infrastructure that we're supposedly supporting, of healthcare and schools and roads and all the rest of the kind of stuff. But the conservatives keep throwing the same sorts of things at ailing capitalism that just don't work. I mean, they say, okay, you know, the secret is going to be we're going to cut red tape. I mean, how many times have you heard a conservative government say, you know, I've got a red tape commission. We're going to, you know, we're going to get rid of, for every new law that we bring in, we got to get rid of a law. Or, you know, we got, everyone's got to cut the number of regulations they have by a third. It's like, you know, if I'm buying medicine, I want there to be a lot of regulations. I want there to be a lot of red tape. I want to make it very difficult for someone to put medicine on the shelf. The same with my meat. I want someone to inspect my meat. I think it's a good thing to pay someone to look at this stuff and go, you know, that cow is frothing at the mouth and is kind of green. Maybe that shouldn't be on anyone's table. I mean, there's all kinds of things that, you know, that conservative governments do in the name of less regulation. You know, they tell corporations, you know what, you're going to be self-regulating. I think that's a good idea. You guys should, because the invisible hand of the market, according to Matt M. Smith, will weed out anyone who isn't self-regulating properly. They just won't buy their sausages if it's full of listeria. But self-regulation has been found not to work very well in the corporate world because they're driven by different things. They're driven by how to make a buck and what can they get away with. And that is the bottom line. It isn't about corporate service. It isn't about being good corporate citizens. It's not about the community. It's, you know, you saw this with things going back like the Pinto or thalidomide or, you know, all kinds of great disasters that we've had where corporate, or recently Boeing, you know, with their jets falling out of the sky. I mean, they basically had a regime of self-reporting, self-regulation, self-audit. And now that's a result of various conservative governments in the United States, Republicans, removing people, you know, firing people because they're on the public payroll and they're investigating the safety, you know, in the FAA of testing new aircraft. And as a result, we found, you know, quite tragically that Boeing was cutting corners and was not telling people, wasn't reporting problems because they've got literally hundreds of billions of dollars invested in these projects. And they're more worried about the hundreds of billions of dollars than they are about a couple of airplanes falling out of the sky in Southeast Asia, because it's a cost of doing business. And that's the metric that raw, naked, bare knuckle capitalism lives by. They don't like the bad publicity. They don't like the stock price going down. And so that's why they have PR flacks and cover stories and all the rest. But at the end of the day, they will choose profits over people because that is the nature of corporations and the nature of bare knuckle capitalism.
Well, you know, we've successfully been told that regulations are bad. You know, we have, with successive governments saying that the problem with our economy is regulation, regulation. Regulation has become a dirty word, much the way liberal became a dirty word in the United States. So they switched to progressives, as if that's not becoming a dirty word, the same way liberal was. We allow certain terms to be demonized. And the fact is, we should be embracing regulation, because proper regulation is the kind of thing that you mentioned. Proper inspection of medications, of food sources, of the environment, you know, of dumping policies for toxic waste. These are things, regulations protect us. They stop us from, you know, from allowing corporations, because it's cheaper, to just dump their toxic waste into rivers and oceans. They stop farmers from putting sick cows out to slaughter and putting that on people's tables. You know, regulations are our friend. And if it means that it costs businesses a little more to comply with the regulations, I'm not crying for those businesses. They should be following these regulations on their own anyway, because that's the cost of doing business. Providing safe meat is the cost of doing business. Providing safe medications, it's the cost of doing business. For having to pay for proper disposal of toxic waste, it's the cost of doing business. And these businesses want to lower their costs of doing business. They don't care who it hurts. They just keep, you know, regulation is bad. And we keep, we're swallowing this hook, line, and sinker. Overregulation is bad. And there's no question that there are regulations that exist because there's a regulation underneath it and a regulation underneath that and a regulation underneath that. And it just kept going until ad infinitum, it became absurd. There's no question that there's areas where regulation is too much, but there's a difference between saying we're going to stop over-regulation and get back to sensible regulation and saying just regulation is bad. I actually embrace regulation. I think it's a sign of a civilized society that we say, no, we need to protect our citizens, and we need to protect them from the potential greed of corporations. And if you wouldn't put profits ahead of people, then you've got nothing to worry about with regulations. You got nothing to complain about, because you'd be following these paths anyways to keep things safe. It's the companies that complain about regulation are the ones that I worry about, because what is it you really are trying to get away with? What is it you would like to do that you're being prevented to do? And why are you being prevented from doing these things? Is it a public safety issue? Because you're right, they do roll the dice. A company, an aircraft company like a Boeing, for example, knows that the lawsuits that come from loss of life on a plane or two that crash out of, you know, fall out of the sky, it's less likely to affect their bottom line than if they recall a whole fleet of planes. And so they're playing the numbers. They don't consider human life to be worth that much, because they're not human lives of people they know. And so they look at them strictly as dollars and cents. Dead people are cheaper than recalling a plane, a whole model of plane.
Yeah, and there's whole departments of certain industries that do nothing but figure out what the value of a human life is. And you know famously, you know, the recall on the Pinto, you know, the part that they had to replace was a couple of bucks, I think. But you know, they decided that the cost of recalling everyone, doing all the work, replacing the piece, taking the hit, you know, in terms of PR, was going to be far greater than the cost of the few people who would explode and die in rear end accidents. So they did they did a spreadsheet and said, you know, this column is bigger than the other one. So, you know, we're going to go with the risk, because even on our worst case scenario, we're going to pay out less, you know, for people dying than we are for fixing the problem. But the whole idea of regulation and the skepticism that has been sort of become the mantra of the right for so long has, you know, we're seeing real consequences of it, because it's now leaking into our social lives as well. You know, look at masks. You know, the resistance to wearing a mask during COVID-19. I mean, it is such a small, simple thing to do. You know, sure, you know, masks, you know, isn't fun, but I don't like wearing rubber boots in the winter either. You know, there are things that you have to do, and wearing a mask is just a easily done, prudent, medically proven thing to reduce the spread of COVID and protect yourself and others. Yet people go on and on and say, well, governments can't regulate my behavior like that. You know, the government has no right to tell me what I should be wearing on my face. And, you know, the answer is, you know, from a legal standpoint, yeah, they do. The government does have a right to tell you what to wear on your face if it is for a public health reason. It doesn't violate your constitutional rights, as the Americans keep going on about, you know, or your divine God-given rights if you're part of the American charismatic or religious South. Wearing a mask is a sensible regulation that people have to do. And just today, a lot of American states, I think they're feeling a little bit more emboldened, partially by the decline of Trump and by the massive increase in the numbers of COVID in the United States, but all over the world, that they're now saying, put on a mask. I mean, a lot of them have gone short of mandating masks, but they're now at the point where saying, like, you should. And again, there's this anti-regulatory culture that has grown up in the last generation and a half, that says, no, you're not the boss of me. I'm going to do whatever I want. And it's, you know, it is dangerous. It's dangerous if you're inspecting meat, or if you're clearing an airplane, or if you're walking around not wearing a mask. It is dangerous, and there's a good reason to have these regulations. But people have got this strange idea that any regulation of our activities, our behavior, is bad.
Well, I mean, this goes back again to the Reagan era, where government was identified as the problem, as opposed to government being a place that can provide solutions for the greatest number of people and also protect people in minority communities. Government is seen as the problem. So if the government is imposing something, it must be something that's done contrary to the best interests of the people, which is absurd, because that is the exact opposite of the purpose of government. Now, there are some governments that are better at serving the will of the people and the best interests of the people than others. There's no question. I don't think we've had any governments where they themselves have said, we don't care about the best interests of the people. I think that there's different ideologies about what is in the best interests of the people. But the notion that government is bad, you know, government equals bad. Therefore, regulations which come from the government must also be bad, that the government is the enemy of the people, to use a Donald Trump term, as opposed to the government is made up of people, elected by people to serve people, and in also by reducing people's expectations of government, we're reducing the level of performance that we expect from government and that government then expects from itself. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I really hate to see the people who say, they're all the same, they're all crooks. No, they're not all the same. And no, they're not all crooks. And I would really love to see some media movement that starts to focus on the life of an MP or an MPP, for example, all the time they have to spend away from their families, going to rubber chicken dinners, to you know, retirement homes in their community and places of that nature, the responsibilities they have. Just because the office closes at 5 o'clock doesn't mean that they stop working at 5 o'clock. Practically none of them do. They keep going. There's constant community obligations that they have to live up to. And we don't see that. What we see is the occasional politician who does something illegal or improper. What we see is a government that takes a misstep and everyone goes crazy over it. We don't see the real hard work that politicians put in. People think it's a cushy job. No, it's actually probably a pretty shitty job, quite frankly.
Yeah. And you know, to go back to, you know, to tie it back into something that you were talking about earlier too, is the thing, you know, government is sort of the counterbalance to sort of naked corporate greed. At least it was for a long time. I mean, everything from, you know, in the United States, federal, you know, antitrust legislation, you know, starting in, you know, in the 20s and 30s, and you know, just bringing it under sort of a regulatory regime that came out of World War II, and, you know, progressive tax system and all the rest. Big business and people who are able to amass an awful lot of wealth saw government as the enemy, because it was in the way of them doing pretty much whatever they wanted to do and making, you know, the Monty Burns school of capitalism, you know, mm-hmm. the Scrooge McDuck, the big vault full of money that you could swim in. And government was there to, as you said, to moderate those excesses and to, to protect supposedly the little guy, especially, in the United States. You know, in Canada, we don't have really quite the same dichotomy because of economies of scale and all the rest. Don't get, we have some very rich families in this country, but we don't have as many as the United States. And there isn't as much money in politics as there is in the United States. And what these, big companies did, whether it's the Mercers or the Adelsons or, the Koch brothers, all the people in that famous book, Dark Money, they basically started a campaign over the last two decades to convince the public that government was the enemy. And it wasn't being, and they convinced, the little guy that it was their cause too. They're going to take away your guns, regulations, and, regulations are standing between you and making a fortune in your little business and startups and all the rest, when it really was about protecting the vast wealth of the oil or the Walmarts or the people who made it big. A lot of them started with absolutely nothing, but now they are some of the richest families in the world, and they use their wealth to convince through a massive public relations campaign, which was mostly covert. It was through all these foundations that you often see on public television and other places, brought to you by the whatever it is foundation. You find out later that foundation is actually running conservative think tanks and is funded by the same group of people. The Americans have really been sold this bill of goods by a few rich people that government is the enemy, and have taken on as their own cause, contrary to their own interests, these right-wing anti-regulation small government ideas, because they've been wrongly convinced that government is the problem, not the big corporations that are the ones who are feeding them the story that a minimum wage, there's 14 American states that have no minimum wage, and you'll find people who are desperately poor who have an opinion on the capital gains tax. When Biden said, I'm changing the tax structure, anyone over making over $400,000 a year is going to get a bump in their tax rate, you had all these people who never had a hope in the world of making $400,000 a year complaining about it. They're championing rich people while they're living in tar paper shacks, because they've been convinced that someday they will be making $400,000 a year, and they don't want to pay tax on that imaginary money that they'll never earn. So it's been this enormous shell game and con job. Some of it's leaked over into Canada. I mean, I think some of the philosophy has, without sort of the underlying basis of of wealth and the money that goes into American politics. Only the very rich can afford politicians these days, because it costs so much to run an election. Mm-hmm. But so many of these politicians, and predominantly Republican, but some Democrats as well, are in the pocket of big industry, whether it's big pharma or, used to be the automotive industry, used to be the cigarette industry. But, now it's, a whole host of other ones, whether it's Facebook or, Walmart or whoever. They're the ones who are funding politics, and they're funding politicians that will advance this, oddly enough, they're funding politicians to advance an anti-government agenda. But you hear it all the time from Mitch McConnell and Paul Rand and, all of those sorts of people who hate the government that they work for.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like the Bloc Québécois getting into government to try to, the government of Canada to ostensibly break up the country of Canada. It's one of those, head scratchers that we accept. We've stopped thinking about what a contradiction it is, and we've just accepted it. The same way, as you pointed out, people, especially in the States, will get up in arms over the notion of taxing people who make over $400,000 a year. We've really, not as bad here in Canada, but it is coming here. The notion of government is bad, and everything government does, therefore, must be bad. And everything you do, which is anti-government, which is, government's job is to pass laws and pass regulations. Therefore, laws and regulations are things that are bad and anti-people. And as much as conservatives haven't won in this country for two elections, and they're not doing real well now in the polls, that conservative ideology is coming in through osmosis from the United States and coming at us from the Western provinces of our country. And I shudder to think that it's going to get greater, you know, greater grip on public sentiment, because we have in this country had for a long time the notion that government is good, government provides for the common good, and that government has made our lives better. And I shudder to think that we will head down the US road of seeing government as the enemy of the people, as opposed to government being the organ that protects the people. And I also shudder at the notion of governments getting into power who actually are endemic to the needs of the people, because that's equally possible. It's very difficult living next door to the United States, because they're going through a very difficult time in their democracy, is probably the politest way to go about speaking of what's currently going on in the United States. And it's difficult for that not to filter here, because there are some people here who absolutely worship the United States and believe that we should be more like the United States. And those people are taking up the chalice of people like Donald Trump, who have nothing pro-social to say or do, nothing that helps to build a society up and build it together and create unity. It's just stuff that is designed to further divide and divide so that others can conquer. Because the people doing the actual foot soldier divisioning are the people who are going to wind up being on the short end of the stick by the people who actually are orchestrating the divides.
Yeah, and the divide is getting, you know, bigger and bigger. I mean, to the point now where the right has had it with Facebook and Twitter and being censored. And their idea of censorship is, you know, not being able to say slanderous, hurtful, bigoted, violent, violence inducing things. And so, you know, they're making this exodus to Parler. Canadians automatically want to call it Parler, because that is actually the word. They're according to their own stuff, it means to speak, which is Parler, but it's Parler because it is American. And you find people, Aaron O'Toole is on Parler, Michelle Rempel is on Parler. That shouldn't be too much of a surprise. Bob Zimmer, Candace Bergen, Brock Harrison. Canadian conservatives have just sort of fed into this alternate right wing reality, where it's a hotbed for the white supremacists, and in the name of freedom of speech, because Canadians have freedom of expression, but conservatives go on about freedom of speech, where you can say all the hurtful, terrible, miserable things about minorities that you want, and no one will censor you. And that's got to be a lovely cesspool to go swimming in. But I suppose, if you're a conservative, you fish where the fish are. And if that's where your gullible wannabe voters are retreating to, because, Twitter and Facebook is too polite and too, imagine Facebook and Twitter being considered too polite and too, too restrained. That's what they believe. And, they're building their own sandbox where they can do this kind of stuff and spread rumors like the Great Reset and all kinds of other easily debunked ideas about stolen elections and Trudeau is a dictator and his father is Fidel Castro and whatever crazy thing is trending on Twitter this week, they can say it there with impunity without anyone calling them out on it.
Yeah, and cesspool is the best way to label that. It's an irresponsible place that is going... Listen, it's really just a countdown until there's some kind of shooter tragedy and it's linked back to conversations on Parler. That's the kind of hothouse that people go to, where these crazy ideas are reinforced day in, day out, and people are made to feel afraid, like someone's coming to get them. Someone's coming to get their guns or coming to take their rights away. And it takes people who are, borderline unstable and pushes them past the border. And in the States, that's a recipe for disaster, because they can get guns, and not a gun, they can get guns and they can get ammunition. And they go out there thinking that they're actually protecting people and protecting the good of the country by killing others. And they get those notions from this victimhood, because that's what you, first of all, the whole idea of Parler is built on victimhood. The notion that these people are victims of censorship, as opposed
to it's a safe place for them.
Yeah, yes. A safe place. It's listen, you when you go on a social media platform, they have they have rules, and when you agree to participate in that social media platform, you agree to those rules. So all they're doing is enforcing rules that you already agreed to. They're not censoring you, and there's the notion that there is something out there that allows people to spread whatever kind of false theories and spread whatever kind of virulent hatred they wish without any regulation. That's a scary thing, because you consider the strength in the United States, especially of the right wing, of the militia movements. You consider the ease with which people get guns. People going into an echo chamber like that, they're going to get their bells rung. And it is dangerous for democracy to have places like that. And people will say, no, it's the essence of democracy, free speech. Well, unfettered free speech is just chaos. It's a terrible idea. Even the United States doesn't have unfettered free speech, because people can sue civilly for slander and defamation. So the notion that anywhere you can just go and say anything isn't true. And in Canada, there are exceptions to our freedom of expression, such as when it's directed at specific individuals or identifiable groups, when it harms the social harmony of our country, we determine, well, you've exceeded, you've been irresponsible with your freedom of expression, and somebody's got to institute, you've got to stand there and be the parent and say, okay, you need to be responsible, and if you're not going to be responsible, there's going to be consequences. Because free speech doesn't mean speech without consequence. Free expression doesn't mean expression without consequence. And that's what these people want. They want to be able to say things without there being any consequences. And quite frankly, people who really believe in what they're standing up for shouldn't be afraid of consequences.
No, and I think it's really indicative of sort of the flavor of where this comes from is, you know, you look at the founders of Parler, you know, the biggest bankroller of Parler, which was founded 2 years ago in 2018, was Rebecca Mercer, who's, you know, a big conservative donor. And she's the daughter of Robert Mercer, who is a hedge fund manager and was a co-founder of Cambridge Analytica. You know, they've been big supporters of Trump and conservative causes. I mean, they're among the mega, mega rich. And, you know, and they basically wanted to create a place where, you know, all of these nuts could get together and talk about Hannity or Laura Loomer, or, you know, give a place where Ted Cruz and Devin Nunes and Eric Trump could go and not be ridiculed by people. You know, I struggle with freedom of expression. I mean, in Canada, you know, freedom of expression is guaranteed in the charter, but it's guaranteed, you know, that the government cannot restrict certain kinds of speech. It's not, you know, that, you know, if someone doesn't publish your letter to the editor in a private newspaper or Twitter or any private organization, the charter doesn't come into that kind of stuff in Canada. It's very different than the United States. You know, and in the United States, they have a much broader, a more absolute freedom of speech than we have in Canada, because Canada, you know, says in the first paragraph of the Charter of Rights that all these rights are subject to reasonable limits, demonstrable limits in a free and democratic society. And we've decided things like hate speech and various other things are not the kinds of things that people should be, that are protected, that, you know, not just consequences, but there's no absolute right to say them even, you know, without some sort of a government sanction. So it's, I do believe in the free exchange of ideas, but the problem is it's becoming, you know, such a megaphone for hateful, hurtful speech that you run into what was called Popper's paradox. Karl Popper, a philosopher who basically said, you know, the tolerating intolerance leads to the intolerant winning and the end of tolerance. So the paradox is the more tolerant you are of the intolerant, the more you're going to undermine, you know, the tolerance that you value. And, you know, it's a tough tightrope to walk, you know. So people, I don't know, there's a Netflix series on called Mythic Quest. I don't know if you've seen it.
No.
I'm sure Leanne has seen it. It's a parody of the video gaming industry, and it's done by some of the people who did It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And it's very, very funny. There's only 10 episodes because COVID hit, but episode about five, they find that Nazis were taking over this gaming platform, which is one of these big world adventures like Skyrim or some of the other ones. And that, the Nazis were basically forming clans and performing hate speech and all the rest. And eventually their solution was to create a server where the Nazis could live, that was very appealing to them. And everyone migrated to that world, and then they just kind of closed it off and it couldn't interact with the rest of the world. So you've got these silos now of people. Parler is one example of it. You see Trump, who's now saying that, you know, Fox News, you know, he's now down on Fox News because they've actually called reality eventually and said, you know, Biden won. And he's now promoting other news networks that are so fringy that, that they're embarrassing to watch. They've created this alternate reality where they can talk among themselves, which used to be fairly harmless, but now they can organize, they can show up in places, like you said, heavily armed. They can, they can plan to kidnap the governor of Michigan. It's become a very, very dangerous place because it isn't just a couple of crackpots talking in a beer in a corner, over their salted peanuts. It's now people who are able to actually organize and undermine democracy.
Yeah. And this is not something that we're exaggerating or that people who discuss it are exaggerating. This is a real threat. And we can't be smug in Canada and say, well, it's not the same threat here as it is in the United States. It isn't until it is. And we have to be vigilant in stopping this. We have to be vigilant in stepping up and speaking truth to ignorance. Because, you know, on social media, there's a lot of people spreading ignorance, and there are other people who are there who are just confused and don't know what to believe. And without people being there to respond with responsible answers, not just demonizing. Well, I don't like to use the term demonizing these people because they're demons. but without making personal attacks on the people's intelligence or sanity, you have to dissect what they're saying. You have to give people places to look to find out actual information, because in the absence of that, they're just going to be basting in these crazy conspiracy theories, and just insulting the conspiracists isn't enough. We have to be out there with information, because there's more people who are just confused than there are people who are committed to a particular ideology. And the best way to try to promote a healthy society and to try to hold back the forces of intolerance is to promote knowledge and education, because most people are looking for that. They want to know they don't want to believe the terror. That's the difference between them and the people who are pushing the conspiracies. The people who push the conspiracies are people who want to believe in conspiracies. But yeah, most people don't want to believe in that.
No, and a lot of people find a lot of comfort in conspiracies because, I think I jokingly tweeted, it actually would be somehow comforting to know that that there was some giant alien reptile Illuminati, pyramid wearing clan that was actually running things, because that's a lot less scary than just, as Homer Simpson says, it's just a bunch of stuff that happens and it's just, a flaming tire rolling down a hill. It takes us back to the beginning. In Canada, the risk is that, our Conservative Party, as in its current incarnation, since Harper turned it into, less of a progressive and more of into a Conservative Party, is that the lure of those kinds of voters, the people who show up on Parler, the people who believe in the conspiracies, the people who are, sure that Trudeau is a dictator, and those people form a core of the Conservative Party. And you see, Pierre Poilievre, who is, pumping the gas on the Great Reset thing. I mean, there's all kinds of conspiracies and right wing stuff that the immigrants are teeming across Canadian borders, and they're all criminals, and they're sort of a play on the Trumpian trope of the Mexicans are all rapists and drug dealers and gang members. They feed that instead of appealing to our better angels, or even just being fair. I mean, just being factual about the numbers. They feed those flames because it's a cheap way to get a certain number of votes. And we've said before, I mean, maybe it's 10% of the Canadian voting public is really that kind of crazy right wing. I'd like to think it isn't that big, but maybe it is full on Trump, Parler, Fox News, whatever you want to call it. And then the conservatives say, okay, we got those guys. We have to keep throwing the meat every once in a while. And now all we need is to convince another 25% of Canadians that we're really not that bad. We'll moderate it a little bit and, we'll put a smiling face on us and we'll appeal to their patriotism or their love of the military or whatever O'Toole is going on about this week. And we're going to cobble together enough people that we can form a government. But it starts with that crazy base. And instead of standing up to it and saying, there's no place in our party for people like you, for anti-Semites, for people who want to slam the door on immigration, on all immigration, on the gun nuts, on the white supremacists, on the Western separatists. Here are the realities. We don't need you in our party. Maxime Bernier tried to take that away from them, and they weren't prepared to follow him. They weren't prepared to go. They stayed with the Conservative Party. And it's, it doesn't bode well for Canadian politics that rump is being coddled and even fed by the Canadian Conservative Party federally and provincially as well. I mean, we get some of that in Ontario with Doug Ford. It's kind of dressed up in a folks kind of thing. But at the same time, he's chartering Charles McVitie's very historically bigoted Christian university in Alberta. Kenny is rolling back all kinds of, not even progressive things, just sensible things. There's a real problem in the Conservative Party in Canada that it has strayed so far from mainstream. I mean, not even, I look at a very, very broad center in Canada, and there's enough of the right-wing center, I think, to, which was the old progressive conservative base, to still appeal to someone if you had a decent leader. One of the things I think that keeps the conservatives from crossing over into majority territory is they're in bed with these nuts. And it makes the center go, they're not even an alternative. Because if they're hanging out with these people, with the crazy conspiracy theories that are being, propagated by the Sun or by Rebel Media or by, the National Post from time to time, I just can't vote for them, even though I'm naturally a light blue conservative. And so the conservatives are cutting their own throats in a certain sense, but they can't wean themselves off of the more ugly elements of the right wing here in Canada.
And I think that's a good place for us to close it off for this week. Some sobering thoughts this week that people can mull over and hopefully spur some conversations amongst themselves and some thoughts amongst themselves, because this is the kind of thing that we need to be putting out there so that people have resources and places to go to where they can hear what's happening in the world without hearing it through the filter of the people who are more and more controlling social media, and that is infecting mainstream media as well. And those are people like the Trump base, agitators, conspiracy theorists, bigots. Hate is a powerful fuel, and we see it powering an increasing movement on social media, which is very disturbing. We have to keep in mind, though, that social media isn't life, and that though some of us spend a lot of time on social media, a lot more people don't. So it tends to sometimes provide a lopsided view of the dialogue that really goes on amongst ordinary Canadians. I don't know.
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
Because it would be sad if it wasn't.
Yeah, these are the stats that I've read, but let's hope that the world never actually mirrors social media.
Yeah.
Stephen, thank you very much for joining us. Well, why am I thanking you? It's our show.
Hey, yeah. Well, thank you, too. Well, thanks all around.
Hey, let's thank each other. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Stephen Lautens can be found on Twitter at Stephen, StephenLautens, at Stephen Lautens. I'm at Stephen with a V, Stephen J. Kersner. And I want to thank you for listening to Stephen and Stephen here on the Fun Network.